This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. We're broadcasting today from the Knight Studio at The Newseum, Washington, D.C.'s newest museum devoted to journalism and the news business. Tonight, the Senate votes on a new, improved $700 billion bailout. The presidential race shapes up in key swing states. Michael Bloomberg wants to stay on as the big cheese in the Big Apple. Tomorrow, Sarah Palin and Joe Biden face off in the expectations debate. It's Wednesday, and time for our weekly dose of the political junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
My mother was born before women could vote. My daughter got to vote for her mother for president.
But I'm the decider.
On Wednesdays, NPR's political editor Ken Rudin joins us at the Newseum to talk about the presidential campaign in particular and politics in general. This week, the politics of the bailout rescue plan. And New York's Michael Bloomberg takes on term limits. Later, we reconvene with Anna Greenberg and Vin Weber to zoom in on the swing states. And still later, what we can expect in St. Louis at tomorrow's vice presidential debate. But first, we start with the news of the week. And as he always does, Ken begins with a trivia question for us.
Hi, Neil. Well, first of all, a correction from last week. My great trivia question was brilliant, except for the fact that I misidentified, I called Roger Staubach, I called him Troy Aikman, which was very upsetting.
They're two very close. It's so easy to make them mistake.
I was roughing the passer, obviously. So I got my penalty. But okay, this week's question, a very easy one that nobody's going to get. Okay, when Sarah Palin was elected governor of Alaska in 2006, she defeated the incumbent of her own party. That was Frank Murkowski. Okay?
In
the primary. When was who was the last woman who defeated an incumbent of her own party en route to winning the governorship?
So if you think that you know, and if you do, you're strange. If you think you know the last woman to defeat an incumbent of her own party en route to winning the governorship of an American state.
That's correct.
Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org.
That's one of the questions that Gwen Ifill will no doubt will be
asking tomorrow night. Yes. And you can also check in on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We'll take any answers. I just see hands flinging up here in the audience at the Newseum. But anyway, Ken, the economy and the government's bailout plan still the number one issue across the country. The Senate to vote on the revised plan tonight. So how come the Senate is expected to pass this with more than 60 votes tonight, and it lost pretty much the same bill in the House of Representatives by a dozen votes?
Well, I'll give you 777 reasons, and that was the stock market that went down on Monday. It was just a cataclysmic, and obviously, look, back home, lawmakers are hearing from people saying they don't like this bailout. Their leaders are saying, their congressional leaders are saying, look, it may not be the nicest thing we have to vote on, but it's important. Banks, credit, things like that. It's crucial for the economy of the nation. I think there was a shockwave, not only in when the House vote went down, but it was interesting. Many TV networks had the House vote and the stock market ticker, the Dow ticker at the same time, and it really was really just...
It was one of those roller coaster drops in the Dow, went like 500 points in 4 minutes.
Absolutely, but it still didn't make the package any more palatable for those who were wavering. Conservatives didn't like it. Even liberals didn't like it. So anyway, the Senate will vote tonight. The House now said they'll vote on Friday. And they have given sweeteners. They've had some more tax breaks for businesses. They've increased the insurance, of amount you have in savings for up to $250,000, things like that. But more importantly, they saw the calamity it did with the markets, and that's why it's expected to pass.
But why did it fail in the first place? A lot of people are saying, well, first of all, it's a failure of leadership of the President of the United States, the Speaker of the House and the Minority Leader in the House, that they failed. Other people saying, no, this was a prairie fire. All of these congressmen and women in close races started looking at their emails and said, I can't vote for this.
That's exactly right. And Democrats probably did have the votes to pass it. It only failed by, as you say, 12 votes, and 64 Democrats voted against it. Could they have peeled off 12 Democrats to vote for it? Probably, but the Democrats said from the beginning they did not want to be the ones to vote to pass the package because, according to them, it's the Republicans' fault. So the Democrats didn't want to pass the package, and then the Republicans go and campaign against the Democrats and the bailout.
So, in other words, the Democrats thought they needed about 80 Republicans to make it look like they had political cover.
Right, and they didn't get that. The Republicans voted it down 2-1. But both John McCain, Barack Obama, strongly in favor of it. You'll see, I expect you will see more than 60 votes passing. But again, look, who knows? I mean, nobody saw it going down last Monday.
Well, we have some people who think they know the answer to today's trivia question. Again, When Sarah Palin was elected governor of Alaska, she defeated the incumbent of her own party, Frank Murkowski, in the primary, who was the last woman to defeat an incumbent of her own party en route to winning the governorship. And let's see if we have some answers here. And we'll begin. This is...
People are really calling in?
This is Ed. Ed with us in Windsor, New Jersey.
West Windsor, New Jersey. How are you, Neil?
I'm well, thank you.
Ken, how you doing?
How are you?
Olympia Snow, governor of Maine.
No, Olympia Snow actually was never governor of Maine. She was a congresswoman, now she's a senator, but never governor of Maine. She was never a governor.
Oh, I thought she was governor.
Nope.
Nice try, though.
Okay.
All right, let's go now to, this is Mickey. Mickey with us from beautiful Oklahoma City. I was just there earlier last week.
And it is beautiful. It's a gorgeous day today. I think the answer is Sarah Palin, since it was just the last election in which she defeated Frank Murkowski.
The semanticists of Oklahoma City calling in.
No, I don't mean to be anti-semantic, but
especially not Happy New Year, by the way.
Thank you very much. But before Sarah Palin, the previous woman did it, but it was Sarah Palin, of course.
Okay.
Well, your question was a little misleading in that way. Before Sarah Palin, which was the last one, and that one, I don't have a clue.
Okay, thanks
Kathy
very much.
Wilcoxon, maybe. All right, thanks.
All right, thanks very much for the call. Let's see if we can go now to Carl, and Carl's with us from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hi, how you all doing today?
Pretty good.
Good. Martha Lane Collins.
No, actually, no, because in Kentucky back then, when Martha Lane, as you well remember,
of course,
Neil,
yes.
When Martha Lane Collins was elected governor of Kentucky, incumbents could not seek re-election, so she did not defeat an incumbent.
Yep. Yeah. I should know better.
Nice try.
Oh, thanks.
All right, let's see
at
if
least, at least he didn't yell at me like the previous caller.
The other caller had a point.
Well,
this is John. John with us from, where is this, in New York, Harpersville?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, please.
Can you hear me? My phone's not coming in too well, but...
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Richards of Texas.
Ann Richards of Texas.
No, actually, no. The governor of Texas at that time was Bill Clements, who didn't run for a re-election in 1990. She defeated a very interesting guy whose name, but who talked about rape. Compared rape to women running in the policy, you should lie back and enjoy it. It was Clayton Williams.
That's right.
But it wasn't. She didn't defeat an incumbent governor to be elected governor of Texas.
Thanks for the call. Nice try.
Yep. Have a good day.
Okay, so long.
And she lost to a guy named George W. Bush 4 years later.
Yes, she did. The guy whose father had born with a silver foot in his mouth.
That's right.
Mike. Mike's calling us from St. Louis. I'm off to St. Louis tonight, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
I'm right well.
Is answer Jane Swift?
Jane Swift, former governor of Massachusetts, acting governor Swift.
She was acting governor, but no, she became governor when the governor of Massachusetts was appointed ambassador to Canada, but she didn't defeat an incumbent. I guess
being appointed ambassador to Canada is a little like being beaten in a primary.
That's right.
Thanks very much for the call. I think, Ken, you may have to put some people out of their misery here.
Okay, well, the answer, as you well remember, was Ma Ferguson of Texas in 1932. See? And the audience knew it.
Thank you for not all jumping up and answering so quickly.
What do I win?
You win the no prize.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that. All right, we've got some other things in the news. And, of course, we're going to get on to presidential politics and the polls later. But there are some interesting developments we're going to talk about Senate races, too. But interesting on the mayoral level in the city of New York, term limits, supposed to be only able to serve two terms. And apparently Mike Bloomberg thinks that he can now buy a third term.
Well, he spent $60 million winning $70 million winning a re-election in 2005. He's very, very popular, very successful mayor of New York, I'm sorry. Predecessors Rudy Giuliani and Ed Koch both endorsed him, including, and so has the Daily News, the New York Post, and the New York Times editorial today said that term limits are a bad thing. But having said that, in 1993 and 1996, voters in New York City voted overwhelmingly to have term limits. So what Bloomberg would like to do is do a temporary change in city council law. The city council would pass a little waiver just because of his economic expertise. He could run for a third term.
For the emergency, yeah. And look, after what's happened this week on Wall Street, he might need the job.
Right, exactly. You don't see him on the ledge anywhere. But in 1940, Wendell Willkie put out a button, no third term and no indispensable man. And there are a lot of people who feel like nobody's indispensable. But I guess in New York City, if anybody can make it work, it's Michael Bloomberg. And he probably could get rammed through. true.
And one of the things we're going to be talking about is the, we had the first debate, and it seemed to have had, you know, landed without sending up clouds of expectations, clouds of recriminations. It seems to have landed with both sides having behaved themselves fairly well, and both men acquitted themselves fairly well.
We're talking about the presidential debate.
Yes, of course.
Last week.
Yeah.
And in some ways, you could say that's good news for John McCain, because he was so distracted by his role in the bailout. He was talking about postponing the debate. We thought he'd be agitated. The expectation game had Barack Obama clearly going to be the winner. I thought for that reason, McCain did well. But again, if Barack Obama went into the debate with a lead, and he did, and he came out, and nothing changed in the debate, and he came out with a lead, then in that sense, it's a win for Obama, because it didn't change the dynamics of the race.
And some people said this was John McCain's best chance. This was the foreign policy debate. Of course, the first, 40 minutes were about the economic situation, not unconnected to foreign policy, but nevertheless, not John McCain's wheelhouse. This was his best chance, at least on the topics that that were announced.
But we still have two more presidential debates, and we have the vice presidential debate tomorrow night, and again, stranger things have happened. But as you said in the beginning of the show, there are some indications, the Pew poll that come out, Quinnipiac and several state polls show that Obama slightly increasing his lead nationally and in key battleground states.
Well, we're going to be talking more about that, as we mentioned. But also, as you look ahead to the next presidential debate, of course, Thursday night we have the vice presidential. But the next presidential debate, town hall style, again, a technique that John McCain is extremely comfortable with.
Yes, but I think both of them would look very comfortable in last week's debate. Barack Obama certainly, I think his comfort level was there. If Barack Obama's goal was to show that he was presidential, sounds like what John Kennedy needed to prove against Richard Nixon in the 1960 debates, I thought he did accomplish that. But at the same time, John McCain's knowledge of world affairs showed as well. And again, it was a draw, but a draw may favor the challenger here.
We're talking with political junkie Ken Rudin. You can read his weekly column, The Political Junkie. How'd you come up with that name?
I got it from Ma Ferguson. Texas.
You can read that at npr.org. When we come back, Vin Weber and Anna Greenberg on the battle for the swing states. And we want you to phone in and be our reporters. If you're in a swing state, what are you seeing? How are the campaigns reaching out to you? What's working? What isn't working? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. You can also zap us an email. The address is talk@npr.org. Or you can join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blog of the nation. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. We're broadcasting today from the Knight Studio inside the Newseum in Washington, D.C. Well, if you just joined us, Quinnipiac University released their latest poll today. The economic crisis, they report, helped boost Barack Obama over John McCain in three key swing states. It shows Obama at or above 50% in Ohio, Florida, and Pennsylvania. No one has won the White House since 1960 without taking two of those three states. If you live in any of the swing states, be our reporters. What are you seeing from the campaigns? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org, and you can also send us your reports on our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. And, Ken, we have to come up with another correction. William Weld, whom Jane Swift replaced, went on to be ambassador to Mexico.
No. There was a Salucci was after William Weld.
Oh, that's true.
That's
okay.
Right. Well, correction. Nice
no
try.
Correction. All right.
Try.
All right. Excuse me?
That's right.
Well, it was rejected.
It was rejected by Jesse
Helms.
All right. Anyway, so I was wrong. Ken Rudin is with us, as you just heard, and those voices chiming in are those of Vin Weber, the former Republican member of the House of Representatives from Minnesota, now a Republican strategist and a lobbyist here in Washington, D.C. Anna Greenberg, also with us, senior vice president and principal of Greenberg, Quinlan, and Rosner, a Democratic pollster, worked on the campaigns of Bill Clinton and Al Gore. And thank you both for joining us again. They've been kind enough to be with us several times through the campaign. And let me ask both of you, these Quinnipiac polls are maybe outliers, but they're interesting in that they show Obama with significant leads in these three key swing states. And you'd have to think, Vin, that John McCain would have to win all three of those.
Well, I think you're right. There's no question that the last 2 weeks, just to pick a time frame, have shown a trend toward the Democrats across the board. John McCain has lost ground to Obama nationally. He has lost ground in just about every swing state, maybe excepting New Hampshire, although maybe you know something I don't. But it's across the board. It's related directly to the economic problem. The only thing I would say as a Republican is at any time in this race since at least the beginning of the summer, if we've looked at a two-week or three-week period of time and said, if present trends continue, this is what's going to happen. We would have been wrong. I mean, Obama had a couple of weeks after he locked up the nomination in June. And then in July, McCain had a surge and almost got it even at the time of the Democratic convention. And then Obama surged ahead a little bit. And then McCain surged ahead a little bit. This is certainly a surge for the Democrats. But I think that to project this out for 30 days is a mistake. It depends on what's going to happen with the bailout on Capitol Hill. It depends on what happens in the real economy. And it's going to depend on what other issues come up in the course of the next 30 days. And, of course, it depends on the debates.
But it's been a volatile time. But, Anna Greenberg, as you look at it, as you look at the blue states and red states, the 51 battlegrounds that we've got, I don't see, looking at that, that there are any blue states, states that John Kerry won, where Barack Obama is not in the lead. Some are narrow, but he seems to be in the lead in all of them.
That's right. The only blue states that are close are New Hampshire, Wisconsin. I think that Michigan looks now pretty solidly, going to go for Obama. And actually, Pennsylvania is looking pretty solid. But I want to just pick up on one thing that Vin talked about. It is true that part of what's happened over the last, I would say, 3 weeks is the sort of economic crisis. And in general, economic issues tend to favor Democrats when those are the most important issues. But there's been other things that have been happening. I think that Sarah Palin has become a significant drag on the McCain-Palin ticket. You've seen her favorability drop considerably in response to a lot of different things. And also, I think
McCain, she could reverse very quickly tomorrow night.
Sure, maybe. I mean, it's going to be hard. And then you've got McCain, I think, sort of losing his footing a bit, starting with the fundamentals of the economy are sound, and then the alleged suspension, and then uncertainty about the debate. And then we've seen some real movement for Obama on underlying measures that are really important around leadership and being up to the job, especially after this debate on national security, war on terrorism, foreign policy. So it is true that this has been a very unpredictable presidential race, but I think that there are some things happening below the surface that make it that much harder for McCain and Palin to come back. And
so Anna is saying present trends are going to continue.
they favor her side, but as you look ahead to this, is this coincidental with the debate? Did the debate, Vin, do you think, change minds?
I think the debate did change minds. I don't think it turned anyone against John McCain, but I think that Barack Obama did well, and he needed to establish sort of a threshold level of credibility, particularly on foreign policy issues, and he performed well enough to do that. That's going into the debate, that's what everybody said that he had to do, and I think he did.
Absolutely. I mean, the dial groups that we did that night and looking pre-post the debate, we saw less movement on economic issues, where I think actually it was sort of a draw for the first 40 minutes, and big movement on all these issues of foreign policy. And I think there's been an assumption that McCain should be better on these issues, but I think that's been an assumption. I actually think that, Obama's always been pretty strong and conversant, and people just needed to see it on the national stage.
Well, let's see if we can get some listeners in on the conversation. And let's go with Jennifer. Jennifer with us from Tallahassee in Florida, very much a swing state, as comes to us as a surprise to nobody.
Hi.
Hi, Jennifer.
We haven't seen a lot here. We're kind of the different country from Florida, because we're North Florida and not South Florida. The wives have been here a couple times doing voter registration drives, being Michelle Obama and Joe Biden, but there hasn't been a ton of commercials and there hasn't been a ton of press.
Tallahassee up in the northern part of Florida, as she was saying, and you would think that that's pretty much the Republican part of the state
territory,
of Florida. Should be, and of course,
right.
Pensacola, the big
and
base.
And only Obama has been on the air in Florida. Now I think that McCain's going to have to go up on the air because it's becoming so competitive. So it's moving into a different column for McCain. I think that's potentially problematic given that he's got some significant resource constraints that Obama doesn't have.
McCain is not airing advertising in Florida?
He has not been, no, just Obama.
He's had actually a more solid lead than we thought he might have had in Florida, given its swing state status up until now, so he hasn't felt the need to advertise. The swing vote, or the big question mark over Florida, I think, Anna would probably agree with me, is what's happening with the Hispanic vote this time around? Republicans have usually been able to dominate the Hispanic vote, which is predominantly, not entirely, but predominantly Cuban-American in South Florida. There is some indication that that might be changing, particularly among younger Cubans this time, Cuban-Americans. And we'll just have to see. If that happens, that could mark a significant change in Florida. But I want to point out, until this economic downturn political downturn.
Right.
McCain was actually holding a larger lead in Florida than we might have anticipated.
But then, just to follow up, and Jennifer, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you. But
just to follow up, one of the things that Barack Obama and the Democrats wanted to do this year was to say, we can force the Republicans to spend time and money in a lot of places where they haven't had to spend time and money before. We may not win in Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia, but we will force them to spend time and effort there.
Yes, and I think that they've largely succeeded in that. The Republicans are still trying to put them on the defensive in a few places in Pennsylvania and Michigan, although I agree with Ann. It looks like Michigan is firm for the other side, maybe Wisconsin. But by and large, right, the battleground states right now, the states that are genuinely competitive right now, are states that were all red last time around.
And I would just add that now McCain is spending in Indiana, which is a little bit astonishing. Obama's been up there for a long time, but they're spending in Virginia, which they came too late, and they, I believe, if they're not already, they're going to be spending in North Carolina.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Kitty. Kitty with us from Reno in Nevada.
Hi there.
Hi, Kitty.
Hi. I'm actually a county commissioner here in Reno, Washoe County, and I have been canvassing for myself, going door to door. And I'll tell you, and I don't go to just Democrats. I go to everyone, inveterate voters. And it's interesting. Everybody wants to talk about the campaign, but there is no true line when it comes to the independents, nonpartisans, and Republicans. I mean, many of them are very unpredictable of whom they will support, and startlingly unpredictable that they don't want anybody who's a Republican from their point of view. And as you probably know, Washoe County is a huge battleground county. And the other issue is McCain hasn't had much of a presence at all yet. I guess they said in the next couple weeks we'll see a lot of paid staffers canvassing the area, but the Obama campaign brings in about 400 people every weekend, young people from California, to help canvass.
Is McCain seen as a Republican? I mean, obviously people in Nevada know him from next door in Arizona, where he's got this
right.
maverick reputation. Is he seen as a standard Republican?
Well, I mean, we had a huge Ron Paul contingency here. Nevada tends to swing quite libertarian, at least in the past. So he can't win for losing on either one of those sides.
Okay, and is Barack Obama seen as a standard Democrat?
You know, I think he's as standard as a Democrat is that is palatable for this state and definitely northern Nevada.
Hmm. Nevada, one of the swing states where John McCain's doing a little bit better.
Well, there's three western states that have been in play for quite a while, Colorado, Nevada, and New Mexico. And Republicans have felt pretty good about them up to now. Nevada is probably the only one that we continue to feel pretty good about, and maybe the caller knows something I don't, but we think McCain has held up pretty well there. Colorado looks like a tough state. I mean, I wouldn't say that it's non-competitive anymore, but Obama has held a lead outside the margin of error, I believe, just barely outside the margin of error for some time now. And New Mexico remains a competitive too, but that was a state that went against Bush in 2000, swung back to Bush narrowly in 2004. You got a popular governor there putting himself on the line for Senator Obama. Those three states are all
and
in play.
And a Senate campaign looks like it's going to the Democrats there
yeah,
too.
Those three states are all in play and probably will remain in play, but Nevada is probably the most likely to remain Republican of the three.
Thanks very much for the call, Kitty.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's some emails. This is from Kim in Columbus, Ohio, where we're going to be next week. I'm a Democrat in Ohio. Every morning as I ride my stationary bike, I watch an endless stream of political ads on the morning news. Recently, an outside group having to do with wildlife preservation has been airing a hideous ad against Palin. It shows live video of people hunting wolves from airplanes. I agree with the message, but the ad turns my stomach. And Ken, have the 527 groups, these are the outside groups who can operate under that part of the tax law, have they been playing a big part in the campaign this time?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, the ads have been up and they've been reported by all the media markets and all that stuff. But I don't know if they've made that much of a difference. Some of them have been vicious on both sides, and liberties with the truth they've taken with both sides as well. But ultimately, I think right now people are just waiting for the debates. The last debate is October 15th. After October 15th, I suspect that if the 527 is going to have any effect, that's when you're going to see it. Not until then.
Anna Greenberg.
Well, I think that we see, that compared to 2004, significantly less spending by 527s and outside groups, and there's a lot of reasons for that. On the Democratic side, Barack Obama sent pretty clear signals that he didn't want donors to write big checks to these outside groups. But on the Republican side, we're also seeing significantly less money, and a lot of the people who funded, say, Swift Boat and other groups are sort of opting out or spending much less, for a lot of reasons, either because of Obama or because they think McCain is not going to win. So there are ads up. like the Defenders of Wildlife ad that the person who emailed talked about, but there's not the same kind of money behind them.
Vin, last time you were on, and Adam, by the way, thanks very much for the call. Last time you were on, we were talking about the money difference and how it might not have been such a big deal as we thought it might be. Obviously, Obama can raise as much money as he can, as he would like, and John McCain accepted the public limitations, $83 million. Mm-hmm. Is money beginning to be a factor now?
I still don't think it's going to be as big a factor as we might have thought it was going to be maybe 60 days ago. McCain has raised a lot of money. The Republican National Committee continues to be an excellent source of fundraising, and although they're one-off from spending it directly through the campaign, they can spend a lot of money like a campaign would spend it. So I think that they're doing well. There's no question Obama continues to raise a lot of money. There's been no sign of a let-up in his fundraising. But, you know, we're doing well. Whatever Governor Palin's problems in the polling that Anna talked about, she continues to help raise money in both large and small contributions in substantial numbers.
Republican strategist Vin Weber, also with us, Democratic pollster Anna Greenberg and political junkie Ken Rudin. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we have a question from the audience here at the Newsian.
Hi. My name is Hajir. I'm from Berkeley, California. I had a question. In light of the recent Republican demands that John McCain step up his attacks against Barack Obama over the past couple of days, do you see the both campaigns turning negative once again, or do you see John McCain understanding that the negative and dirty politics has backfired in a sense?
Well, I think both campaigns have been negative, and I think both campaigns will get more negative.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the advertising, and people who live in battleground states know that both campaigns have been fairly negative. I think what Barack Obama can do because of money is actually have a couple tracks of media up. So he's got very strong positive ads straight to camera and then a track of negative. But it's never – the ads have been negative, you know, really since before the conventions.
Time, right?
Yeah.
I, by the way, don't agree with the notion that negative equals dirty.
Right.
You can have a dirty campaign. There's no question about that. But negative ads can convey even more precise and accurate information than positive ads can and frequently do.
But the two things that I think, you know, we might see happen are, you know, I think McCain in some, you know, stepping up the attacks, as you say. But one of the things that came out of the debates, clearly he was seen as more negative. I think even though in some ways the debate was a draw, especially on economic issues, I think people came out feeling like McCain was pretty nasty. The other piece is, going back to these outside groups, there's now a push to air ads against Obama that mention, you know, Reverend Wright, that mention Bill Ayers, and you've seen those on the internet, and there's very small buys right now, but I think that's where you'll see some of the nastiness, you know, come in.
I agree with that.
It's also interesting, though, that Democrats who say that McCain was too nasty during the debate are the same people who say that they want Barack Obama to be more negative and taking it to John McCain.
But the research that we did on the debate would suggest that people actually liked it when Obama said, I agree with John McCain. Or they liked the civility.
Let's get another caller on the line. Thanks very much for the question. Let's go now to Lindsay. Lindsay with us from Denver in Colorado.
Hi. I was calling a couple comments that were just made. One, I thought that McCain was a little negative during the debate, and I certainly don't want Obama to get more negative.
Negative
in Colorado, we're getting a ton of negative advertising. And a lot of that is in our Senate campaign as well. But that's what I hear most people saying they're completely tired of. And the trickle-down that I wonder is happening from that is I, here in Colorado, and then my mom in Missouri, both a friend here and my mom had Obama signs stolen out of their yard. And so I just wonder if some of that negativity...
That might be from Obama supporters who want it to put on their lawn.
Do what?
It might be from Obama supporters who want it for their lawn.
Well, we have had a hard time getting them in Colorado, but I went and had a few made even. But I just wonder if that negativity in the big picture kind of trickles down to people, you know, doing things like that, when part of what's amazing is that you can put any sign you want in your yard and you should be able to do that.
Yeah, it does get, as it becomes more partisan, as it gets down to the last couple of weeks, the last 4 weeks now of this campaign, 4 weeks and a little bit more, Ken, people do get very excited and do things that if they actually talk to the campaign, they would tell them not to do.
And if Anna's talking about civility during the presidential race, the call is exactly right. In closely fought Senate races, below the radar, below the national radar, they have been uglier and uglier as they've been getting closer and closer.
Thanks very much for the call, Lindsay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Here's an email. This from Larry in Houston, Texas. A couple of weeks ago, I noticed I had not seen even one bumper sticker for McCain in Houston. I see many Obama stickers. In 2000 and 2004, there were many, many, many Bush-Cheney and then Bush 04 stickers. Now, 2 weeks later, I still have not seen one McCain or McCain-Palin bumper sticker. Either interest in Houston is low or the McCain campaign is not doing a good job, but nevertheless, I don't think Texas is in much doubt, so maybe they're just not sending their bumper stickers to Houston.
Can I just say one thing about the – we're talking about the numbers, though. If you go to the NPR.org, we have a map, and a constantly updated election map that right now, if we're not including the toss-up states, we have Barack Obama with 269 electoral votes. And then we still have Nevada too close to call and Florida too close to call and New Hampshire too close to call. Ohio's too close to call. But again, he's on the precipice of the magic 270. Obviously, things could change, as Vin has said over and over again, for the next 5 weeks.
We're going to continue this conversation after a short break. And if you'd like to report in from your swing state, give us a call, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. We also want to talk about some of the interesting Senate races around the country. And again, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org if you've got a close Senate race in your neck of the woods. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today on Talk of the Nation, we're focused on swing states in this election, much like both of the candidates, and with good reason. No Republican has ever been elected president without winning the state of Ohio, and Minnesota, which is in play this year, has voted Democratic in every presidential race since 1976, the longest such streak in the country. Those facts courtesy of who else? Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor and our own political junkie. We're joined here at the museum by Anna Greenberg, a Democratic pollster, and Vin Weber, Republican strategist and a former Republican congressman from the state of Minnesota. And I wanted to read you this email that we got, Vin, about the Senate race there. Mm-hmm. Any chance that Dean Barkley, the independent candidate who has 13% in the polls, could do a Jesse Ventura to Coleman and Franken, who have torn each other apart and made it a very ugly race there in Minnesota?
Well, that's a big question in that race, because Dean actually was appointed by Jesse Ventura and served in the Senate for a couple of months. There wasn't anything happening, so he didn't get a chance to make his mark, but he is a former senator. He's at 13%. Jesse Ventura never came in second in any of the polls when he ran for governor that I saw. And I was watching pretty close. And yet he won on election day and surging a lot at the end. I don't think that Dean Barkley can surge to win. But I think that he can surge to 15%, maybe 18%, depending on how negative the race is, depending on the mood in the country. Ventura was such a powerful personality, powerful, negative or positive, depending on how you viewed him. Dean Barkley, who I know well and who I like, is a wonderful guy, but he's not like that. He's a much more conventional personality. He's not going to capture the imagination, in my judgment, of swing voters, young voters, the kind of people that
he wasn't the fourth guy in Predator.
He didn't campaign with a bow in his head. I mean, obviously, what did it for Jesse Ventura was that late minute debate where he really excited everybody, and that's what a lot of the Ralph Nader, Bob Barr people complain about. They say that if they had an opportunity to,
I think that's
be in
right.
a debate,
and the constituency that turned out for him was young people who we normally think aren't going to vote no matter what they say. They turned out in droves for Jesse Ventura,
but he turned out to be an extremely unpopular governor in the long run.
Yeah, he wasn't. It's interesting. He wasn't a bad governor. He appointed a bipartisan group of very good commissioners who ran the state in a pretty much nonpartisan way. He became very unpopular because of things he said, which in many cases had nothing to do with his being governor. Because, for instance, he dissed organized religion, said it was for people with weak minds. Well, you know, Minnesota's a state where you got a very organized Lutheran church and a big Catholic church. I mean, organized churches have a whole string of private colleges that are church-based in Minnesota. A whole thing. But now that had nothing to do with being governor of Minnesota. But it's things like that, as opposed to governing the state, that made him unpopular.
Anna Greenberg, there are a couple of other interesting and surprising Senate contests. One, who expected North Carolina to be a contest?
Absolutely. I think, you know, Elizabeth Dole has real issues, certainly real issues around fundraising, which when she was the head of the Republican Senate campaign committee, she didn't do a terribly good job, and she's not done a terribly good job on her own. And she's got some personal issues, but there's a lot of places you wouldn't imagine. You know, Alaska, obviously Stevens has big problems, but Alaska's not generally a place.
He's got big problems in Washington, D.C.
Both places, yes. He's got problems in both places, but generally not a state you think of as competitive. And then you have other places like Kentucky. There have been two public polls that have shown the race tied. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but if, you know, McConnell's the minority leader in the Senate, and it's sort of like sort of Tom Foley losing. I think there's a real wave, and it is possible that Democrats could pick up upwards of 8 Senate seats if you look at where the races are right now.
And get close to the 60 votes that they're hoping to get.
Yeah.
Ken?
Yeah, that's what's so remarkable about it. I mean, we know that, for example, the open seats of Virginia was going to go Democratic. We know that Colorado and New Mexico, with the two Udall cousins, are running two Democrats. most likely pickups for the Democrats. But Gordon Smith was not supposed to be in trouble in Oregon. Elizabeth Dole, the Democratic challenger there, Kay Hagan, was supposed to be a very exciting candidate, unimpressive candidate, and yet Elizabeth Dole has not shown up for many campaign rallies. She's not been in the state that much, and the polls show, many polls show Hagan ahead, which would be a real shocker.
Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, thought to be one Democrat who might be vulnerable this year.
She had double-digit lead over John Kennedy, the Democrat turned Republican for state treasurer. She was supposed to be the only Democrat in any kind of problems, and not because of anything she did wrong, but because of demographics.
She can't use that old Lloyd Benson line, though.
No, I knew John Kennedy.
but that's still a competitive strategy. I agree with you. The Republicans lost ground there because of the hurricane. It helped the incumbent. She was able to be the incumbent. But that is still a competitive race. It's a kind of unique race. One of the few states this year that's trending Republican. John McCain has a 25-point lead. That's still definitely a competitive state.
Saxby Chambliss in Georgia. Latest poll shows him up only 2 points. That would be a stunner.
Yeah, the economic problems we face have dragged down Republican numbers across the board, just sort of restating what I said earlier. And it makes a lot of people look vulnerable. Anna says maybe there's a tide coming. It's going to sweep out all sorts of people. When you have a tide like that, a Watergate tide or a 1994 Republican tide, you're right. A lot of people lose that you don't think is going to lose. I just say I'm not at all convinced that that's where we are in this race at this point.
But states like Mississippi, where there also is, you know, looking like a potentially competitive race, and Georgia have large African-American populations. And turnout among African-Americans is not just going to be high. There are going to be a lot of African-Americans registered and voting who don't normally participate. So it is possible that a tide plus record African-American turnout in some of these southern states could win some seats.
Yeah, but it has bounced back and forth, as Vin has said before. But anyway, let's see if we get some more callers on the line. Let's go to Catherine. Catherine with us from Jacksonville in Florida.
Hi.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi. I'm just commenting on, I'm in a swing state, obviously, and I've been receiving a lot of mail from Obama. And my dad made a comment because he's not receiving anything. He's a registered Republican. Me and my mom were registered Democrats. And I thought it was very interesting that it's all coming to us. And, you know, obviously, I believe we're going to vote for Obama, but he's not getting anything. And I was wondering how they target who they want to vote for them in a place where, you know, I would think that he would want my dad's vote more than he would be begging for mine, you know?
Now, Vin Weber, The Republican campaign's given great credit for knowing who their voters are and targeting them.
I can't offer an explanation. That part of the campaign is supposedly going very well, and the caller's right, her dad should be getting a lot of mail.
Thanks very much.
He's not getting anything. Crazy. Thank you, though.
Thanks for the call, Catherine. Appreciate it. Let's see if we can go now to, if I can find the right button, this is Jim. Jim with us from Spencer in Iowa.
Yes, hi.
Hi, go ahead, Jim.
I've actually been Spencer, Iowa.
Joy to be a swing state, finally. Yeah, I think Bush is pulling this wheezing gas guzzler up to the gas pump for us at the end of this term of his, like the family vacation car that didn't make it to Wally World in time. But
Go ahead. We'll skip the Griswold jokes. Go ahead.
Yeah, anyway, we still have the dead relative on top. I was in the state capitol the other day, and a conservative representative came up to a party organizer for the Democrats with his cane in hand and said, "I want you to beat McCain." And that was the first time I think I've ever heard somebody from that side of the aisle encourage us to get a man like McCain in there. And I hope that he can get this thing pushed off the lot with, you know, a little bit better mileage than we've had for Wall Street in the past.
The only thing that might be straining more is the metaphor here.
Right.
But, Jim, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Bye-bye. Here's an email for me. Mr. Conan is a proud Canuck. I say, tish, tish, Ray, your comment that some would consider an appointment to ambassador to Canada being equivalent to defeat. Many of my dearest American friends tell me they're thinking of moving north to God's country if the November election swings right again. What you think of that? A. Okay. let's see if we get one. We got just a couple of minutes with you, and we'll reconvene before Election Day. But I wanted to ask you, Anna, we've got three more debates, one vice presidential, two presidential. Other than that, what could change the dynamic of this race? We've seen John McCain go for the Hail Mary pass a couple of times now.
I honestly am having a hard time thinking of what could change the dynamic. Hopefully, you know, Vin can probably come up with something. I mean, it seems to me that where we are economically is where we are. I can't imagine suddenly we're going to have a miraculous economic recovery and people are going to feel more comfortable with John McCain on economics. So I think that piece is sort of well set. Potentially something could happen internationally and people might feel, you know, more comfortable with John McCain because he's got, you know, has, you know, experience in that area. But it's hard to, again, I see underlying trends that are all going in the wrong direction for John McCain, and it's right now hard for me to imagine what could push it in another direction.
Game changers, Vin Weber?
Well, I think that Anna's got it about right. The international scene is where you have to look for something that could help McCain. And it's not so much that everybody's anxieties about the economy would go away, but that they would there would be room for other news. You know, if we hadn't been in the middle of this financial crisis, the biggest story of the last couple of weeks would have been the bombing of the Marriott Hotel in Islamabad.
It would have been one of the big stories, yeah.
Yeah, a cataclysmic thing, which would have focused attention at least somewhat again back on the issue of terrorism. When the Russians invaded northern Georgia, John McCain saw a boost in the polls. Maybe it was related to other things. Maybe it was related to that. But if people's attention focused back on the many dangers we face around the world right now, and there are more than there usually are, I mean, Pakistan, Iran, you know, look. That could change the shape of this campaign. The other thing is a mistake by somebody. You know, we got three more debates to go, and the last debate was good because for Obama because he didn't because he lived up to a certain standard. If it wasn't really bad for McCain, but when the times the debates are really decisive, I think Ken would agree with me and Anna too. Is when somebody makes a big mistake.
Liberates the people of Poland.
Liberates the people of Poland, something like that. And that's with three more debates to go, or at least two at the presidential level. That's what you have to look for.
All right. Again, we will reconvene before then, but thank you both very much. We appreciate your time, as always. Anna Greenberg, Senior Vice President and Principal, Greenberg, Quinlan and Rostner, a Democratic pollster, and Vin Weber, former member of the House of Representatives from Minnesota, Republican strategist and lobbyist, both of them kind enough to join us here at the Newseum, and also Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie. You can read his column at npr.org. Is this week's column up yet?
It is.
Get your homework done.
Oh,
that's unusual. Ken, as always, thanks very much for your time today. You're listening to Talk of the Nation coming to you from NPR News.